Welcome to episode 1446 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive. 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. We are continuing our series on the life and times of the apostles, continuing this week with a focus on the Apostle Peter. In our last episode, Peter stepped out of a boat and onto the water, learning that faith grows when our eyes remain fixed on Christ rather than on the storms around us. Today we arrive at a turning point, not only in Peter's journey, but in the entire gospel story. Acts of the Apostles, Part 1, Chapter 6.
There is a question that sooner or later every one of us had to answer. Not publicly, not in a debate or a synagogue or a formal declaration. Privately, in the place inside yourself where you keep the things you actually believe as opposed to the things you say you believe. Who is this man? We had been walking with him long enough that the question had become unavoidable. You can explain away one miracle. You can find a framework for two or three. But at some point, the explanations run out, and you are left standing in front of something that will not fit inside any category you were given, and you have to decide what to do with that. Jesus decided one afternoon to ask us directly. I have thought many times about why he chose that particular place to ask.
Kama shava hedem?
שלם מהלך, חבר.
פוסון קוסטיסיטוטו.
פלטוס פרוסקיניטון סמרון.
פרייפקטוס קרס אדוויליאט.
אמפורוי אלתון אפודמאסקו.
Caesarea Philippi was not a Jewish town. It sat at the foot of Mount Hermon, at the headwaters of the Jordan, thick with the religion of the nations. There was a great cliff face studded with shrines and niches and temples to every deity you could name. Pan, the Greek god of the wilderness, chief among them. At the base of the cliff, a dark opening from which the spring emerged that the locals called the Gate of Hades, the entrance to the underworld. Jesus brought us here deliberately. I am certain of that now. He chose the most contested spiritual ground in the region, a place where the nations had stacked their answers to the deepest human questions, shrine upon shrine upon shrine, and he stood in front of all of it and asked us who he was. He began with a warmer question. Who do people say the Son of Man is? We told him what we had been hearing. John the Baptist raised from the dead, some said. Elijah, one of the ancient prophets, come back. He listened to all of it. He did not comment on any of it. And then he looked at us, not at the crowd, not at the cliff and its shrines behind him, at us, and asked the question he had been building toward all along.
But what about you? Who do you say I am?
Silence. The kind of silence that falls when everyone in a group is waiting for someone else to speak first. I looked at the others. The others looked at the ground. I spoke. I did not plan what I said. I was not the designated spokesman. There was no prior discussion, no consensus reached among us on the road. The words came from somewhere not quite my own reasoning, quickly without deliberation, and they were the most important words I have ever spoken. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. The Messiah, yes. We had been moving toward that conclusion for months, some of us faster than others. But the Son of the living God, that second part. I do not know even now whether I fully understood what I was saying when I said it. I knew it was true the way you know something received rather than reasoned. not built out of evidence and argument, but placed whole into an open hand. Jesus looked at me for a long moment, and then he said something I was not prepared for.
Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven.
By my Father in heaven. Not well reasoned, Simon. Not. You have been paying close attention. Revealed, the word you use for things that arrive from outside the ordinary channels of human knowing. The confession had been given to me, and he was naming that. And then he said more.
And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it.
The gates of Hades. Standing 30 feet from the cave the pagans called the entrance to the underworld, he looked at me and said, "The gates of death itself will not prevail against what I am building. And what I am building it here, on this, on you." I stood there with the sound of the spring in my ears and the shrines of the nations at my back, and I felt the weight of that settle on me like a mantle placed on a man's shoulders by a king. I did not yet know what it would cost. He told us then not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Strange, we thought. Surely this was the point. Surely this was the announcement the world had been waiting for. But we were learning, slowly, that his timing was never what we expected. And then, almost in the same breath, he told us what was coming. He must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, be killed, and on the third day be raised to life. I heard the first part. I could not hold the third part alongside it. Suffer. Be killed. Those words drowned everything else out, the way a wave takes out everything on a shore. And I did what I always do when something frightens me and I refuse to admit I am frightened. I acted. I took him aside, me who had just confessed him as the Son of the Living God. I took him aside like a man correcting a colleague who had misspoken in a meeting, and I said, "Never, Lord. This shall never happen to you." The greatest moment of my life and the most embarrassing moment of my life were separated by perhaps 5 minutes. He turned. The look on his face was not the look of a man receiving counsel. It was something I had not seen directed at me before, and hope never to see again.
"Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns."
Satan, the adversary, the one who places himself against the purposes of God. 5 minutes. Caesarea Philippi is perhaps the clearest picture of what I am in a single afternoon. The vessel of divine revelation and an instrument of satanic resistance. Not because I was uniquely gifted or uniquely wicked, because I was human, because the same mouth that can speak truth given from above can, 5 minutes later, speak fear dressed up as loyalty. What I have come to understand, slowly, at considerable cost, is this. The confession was real. The blessing was real. The rock was real. Jesus did not take any of it back. What he corrected was not my identity, but my agenda. The part of me that wanted a Messiah who would win in the ways I understood winning and could not yet imagine a victory that required a cross. I was not wrong about who he was. I was wrong about what that meant. It took me a long time to learn the difference, longer than it should have. But that, I think, is the nature of this particular lesson. It cannot be simply explained and received. It can only be lived through, usually more than once, usually at the point of some fresh embarrassment. I have had no shortage of those.
Many of us are like Peter at Caesarea Philippi. We can correctly confess who Jesus is while still misunderstanding what it means to follow him. We want a Messiah who solves our problems, removes our suffering, and advances our plans. But Jesus often leads us along the path of surrender, sacrifice, and trust. The good news is that our misunderstandings do not cancel God's calling. Jesus did not withdraw Peter's blessing or revoke his identity as the rock. He simply corrected the assumptions that stood in the way of deeper discipleship. Following Christ requires more than believing the right things about him. It requires allowing him to redefine our understanding of victory, success, and faithfulness. To be continued.